Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Christian Catt. We're at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. We got you for the next 2 hours. It's a beautiful Monday, the 6th. We got our boy Weston in the house. You're here to watch the show with us. And Mike, we got a lot to talk about, my friend. First of all, first things first, Weston comes in. Weston's in third grade. And Weston, the first thing he does is declare his allegiance to Ohio State.
And my man.
So that's how you get on Mike Rizzo's good side.
My man.
Immediately. His mother went to Ohio State. He was born in the Ohio State Hospital. So that's a tough sell.
His mother from Columbus went to Ohio State. First thing I told you is that a kid was a Buckeye fan before he was born. So, and born in Columbus Hospital means a lot.
His father is a Penn State guy.
Correct.
So one day a year, it probably has to drive the Penn State fan crazy whenever they play Ohio State. But he did choose the better of the two halves because now he can celebrate a win for Ohio State while Penn State is grieving after losing to UCLA, an unranked opponent, one of the worst losses Penn State has suffered in 15 years. Christian Catt is our Penn State guy behind the glass, too. So we got a lot to react to. We got a lot of things to touch on. It's NFL Week 5, which is now mostly away and done with. We have a good Week 5 Monday Night Football game. Jaguars-Chiefs coming up a little later on. And we'll get into that because we got you for 3 hours today, actually, up till 7 p.m. We get the fifth quarter presented by Hard Rock Bet starting at 6 o'clock. And, Mike, the thing I wanted to start with in terms of the games yesterday in favor of our pal Weston, who's a big Eagle fan, too. So you love the champions, Weston does. He's got two championships in football the last 2 years. Eagles lost yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And I don't want to hear from Philly fan how it was pass interference at the end of the game.
See, this is why Mike's in a tough spot.
Spare me.
Mike hates the Philly fan. Yeah. Mike hates the Philly fan. Mike cannot stand a Philadelphia sports fan. But he's got Weston here, our pal, who is an Ohio State Philadelphia fan.
He's allowed to be, though. The dad's from Philly. By the way, dad's not like Philly fan that works with us, okay? Dad is a good Philly fan. All right, I promise you on that. But I called the game itself, I think one of the better games this Sunday. You got to give credit to Sean Payton and the Broncos for fighting back in the game. They were losing the game for majority of the time. And then I did think originally when they weren't able to drain the clock and kick the field goal, I did think Philadelphia was going to go down and score. And to be fair, was that holding pass interference a flag? I would probably say yes, okay? I probably would.
They had three other flags that drive, which is why I didn't even bother to
correct.
Consider it.
So, like, but at the same time, I understand Philly fans' gripe. You aren't going to win all those games. I understand that at the end of the year, you look and see who's been great in a close game. But Philly, you weren't going to win like that all season long. You did that for the first 4 weeks of the season. You were living on the edge like that for the first four games of the season. I compare it to Kansas City early on. Remember how Kansas City beat Denver last year? And it's like, oh my God, how did they win that game? I think that game was last week for the Eagles when they didn't complete a pass in Tampa Bay and somehow won the game. So I'm not sounding the alarms. If you're an Eagle fan, I wouldn't sound the alarms.
I wouldn't either.
I found it funny today. People were going, you know, pundits for, you know, national pundits were going, how would you fix the Eagle offense? Why does it need fixing? Why are we looking at this thing with a magnifying glass? They won about 20 games in a row.
Yeah.
And now it's like, how do you fix it? That's not the question. The main question with the Eagles today is, are they the team that's going to continue to win these games? Are they the new Kansas City Chiefs of the NFL where they're going to win these games and it's just not going to be pretty? I think that's the conversation, not the, are you going to fix it? There's nothing to fix here. Jalen Hurts, the quarterback who figures out how to win in big spots. Saquon Barkley's still the best running back in the NFL. And spare me with the feelings getting hurt of the wide receivers.
That was my
spare me with that.
That's my big takeaway. Because the story around the Eagles the last, week and a half has been, hey, A.J. Brown, who we know is a great player, is unhappy.
Well, he did this last year.
And Devonta Smith, another player who's a really good player, unhappy but in a different way. And it's all turning to, well, how can the Eagles get those guys involved and become, you know, the best version of themselves and get the passing game going and make sure those receivers are well-fed, so to speak. And then Jalen Hurts goes out there, throws 38 passes. The second time he's thrown 35-plus passes in 2 years. And he throws 38 passes, and they blow a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. If there is not a more indicative aha moment, we talked about it earlier. There's not an aha moment like the fact that, all right, receivers, hey, we threw the ball. And even that last play of the game, a Hail Mary, where both Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown were fighting over the same football. If there is not a bigger moment of, all right, now can we put this to rest? Can we put, you're going to have to make a decision as a receiver. Do you care that much about your individual performance, or do you want the team to win? Yep. I'm not saying the fact that Jalen Hurts, that the receivers played well is the reason that they lost, but the reason is Jalen Hurts throws the ball a lot, and they tend to lose a lot more because of that than when he's a manager, 20, 25 passes a game, and they're able to control the ball on the ground. That's where I got. You threw the ball trying to satisfy your receivers, and you blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter at home to a team you probably should have beaten and controlled the entire game. That's where I'm like, all right, that's the more pathetic nature to that whole game.
If I'm a Philly fan, I'm sitting today going, didn't we do this song and dance last year? Didn't Jalen Hurts have to come out and talk to the media and explain that him and A.J. Brown are talking? Remember the story last year was A.J. Brown and Hurts aren't talking,
right,
and that they hate each other. I thought winning a Super Bowl would fix all of this. I thought the receivers, and then listen, I'm putting myself in Philly fan's shoe here. If I'm a Philly fan, I'm going, I thought winning a Super Bowl would have fixed all this garbage. Isn't it about winning now? We got a taste of what it's like to win a Super Bowl. Shouldn't we all just put our egos aside and focus on winning a Super Bowl again?
And it's only the receivers. You got to make a decision. You're not going to have the best individual statistics if the team is going to be great. That's where you're in a tricky spot. You know, Cooper Kupp had an example. That's a different situation when he won the Triple Crown and then he went on to win the Super Bowl. That's different. Very rarely does a receiver at the top level in the National Football League be that great and the team also be great. It very rarely happens. Mm-hmm. It is about the quarterback playing great, the offensive line, defensive line playing great, and them having a stable rushing attack for the most part. You need all of that, and then the team is usually really good. The receiver does not need to be excellent for the team to be consistently great. That's where they have to make a decision. Do I care more? And the thing is, they're in a tough spot because what are you going to do on a 4-0 team? Say, I want out?
Right.
Because
it's a bad look on you.
It looks bad. Because what team is going to want? What team? That's the opposite of team first. So what team is going to look at that and say, oh, let's go get him? There are receivers on really bad teams that are excellent. And they have their fun. They make their money. And they don't do a thing in the National Football League. Take a look at Justin Jefferson. There is a lot of great receivers that will never get the opportunity to be on great teams. They're lucky enough to be on an excellent, not even just great, an excellent team. And they're now sitting here complaining left and right about their usage. If there is not a, hey, look at this, start getting on with the program. If there is not one of those games on the schedule, take a look at what happened yesterday. Because that's the game on the schedule where the Eagles can say, we tried to throw it all game. We threw it 40 times for a guy who doesn't like throwing it 40 times. Maybe the defense forced us into that, but we're definitely trying to satisfy the needs of our receivers more and more. We did that, and we lost.
I also think every game is different.
Totally.
The ebbs and flows of these games are different. Sometimes.
But you blew a 14-point lead, and you couldn't score at the end of the game when you're throwing it every down.
Right.
That's where I look around and I say, all right, I mean, this is clearly a better team when they're based on Hurts in the short game and Saquon Barkley rushing attack. That is when the team is at their best.
Yep. And you know, how far Eagle fan has come, right? You know, two Super Bowls, 16 and last year, and now you lose one game after, you know, winning your first 4 weeks, winning the way you did too, you know, in close games, pulling it out, finding a way, getting called the new Kansas City Chiefs, and now everyone wants to call fire after one damn week. I mean, come on. This team's fine. Sirianni's a good coach. I think Hurts is a great quarterback. You got the best running back
fine.
In football, and you got the best defense in football.
All right. If there's not a bigger moment for tell the receivers, hey guys, take a back seat. All right.
Yeah.
Like we'll let you know when your number's
just,
called.
I thought we were done with this.
But there's your aha. Like, there's your aha. That's what the team needed. There's your aha. We're not playing like that anymore.
Now was this one more about the Eagles blowing it or the Broncos pulling through?
I would say
spot?
I both because the Broncos did go for two to take that 18-17 point lead, and that ended up winning them the game because now the Eagles had to go down and score a touchdown after that following field goal to make it 21-17. That ended up winning the game. That was a gutsy call. But this, to me, is the Eagles getting four opportunities in the fourth quarter and not being able to do anything with it.
And I was listening to you fill in for Theo today. You called Mayfield the gamer. I think I'm going to say the same about Knicks.
He's a gamer.
I think I'm going to say the same
thing
about
Knicks. He's just going to gut out a game.
He's one of those guys that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Throughout a course of a game, he could throw two interceptions in the first half, but he's going to come back in the second half, and he's going to have a fresh head. You want to know what I think a lot of that is? Playing 5 years in college.
Yeah.
Playing 5 years in college, having a ton of experience, having bad games, having bad halves, but being able to have that experience.
He's got a short memory.
And I think a lot of it has to do with college, but him and Peyton were brilliant yesterday. I thought Sean Payton called a great game, and I did think those two were the main reason they were able to come back and win that
clutch
game.
Now, third down conversions.
Give credit to the defense, too. Yeah. Give credit to the defense getting stops late in the game from one of the – and I don't care what people say. I still think Philadelphia has a great offense. The numbers might not be there. Spare me.
The offenses are great.
It's a great offense. And for the Denver Broncos to get off the field at key moments, I thought was everything to let Bo Nix and Sean Payton do their thing on the offensive end.
Yeah, the Eagles, I mean, they blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. It was a situation where the Broncos were 1-112, trailing by 14-plus in the fourth quarter in their franchise's history. And now they're 2-112 based off that game in Philadelphia. Good for my over. I needed 10 wins from the Broncos, and we should be in decent spot looking ahead. But that was the type of game where the Broncos couldn't get out of their own way, and now you look around thinking that's the type of win that we need to catapult us into at least stardom.
You and I love talking about the teams that are good in close games. We just talked about the Eagles and how they were able to pull these games out. The Broncos, the Indianapolis game where they're jumping the center, the Charger game. I feel like they deserved this game.
They needed a win.
They needed a win, and I feel like how they lost against the Colts jump in the center and how they lost against Herbert and the Chargers, it's like, okay, the football gods do exist in the sense of they were able to get one. They were able to get a close game. This team could easily be 5-0. They could easily be 5-0 and at the top of the I know I understand the divisional games and whatnot, Kyle, but they should be the top team in the AFC West at 5-0 right now if a couple of things went their way. And I think with a good coach like Sean Payton and a gamer quarterback like Bo Nix would be a tough out. And I remember watching NFL Live before the season started. Teddy Bruschi, one of my favorite guys, he goes, look out for Denver. I go, really? Like, they were talking about Super Bowl contenders. And he said Denver.
Their offense isn't consistent enough.
But I didn't understand it at the time, and that's why I was going to you. I said, Bo Nix in the second year, there's a lot of questions there. Is a guy like J.K. Dobbins going to be able to stay healthy throughout the entirety of the year? You know, former Buckeye, or our buddy Wes over here, former Buckeye J.K. Dobbins. But I kind of see the vision. I do. Hall of Fame coach, elite defense, and a gamer in Bo Nix.
Isn't it bizarre how things can change in basically the 3 weeks? Because 3 weeks ago we were talking about how Denver's in a tricky spot, especially how they've handled the first couple games of the year, losing the way they did to the Colts. And you talk about the Chargers, who started the season 3-0 in division games and now have dropped two straight games in dramatic fashion.
Well, I told you.
And then you got the Chiefs, who are 0-2. Are they done? And then all of a sudden, they got an opportunity to go 3-2 themselves. That is the life of the NFL. Any given Sunday, 3 weeks can change the entire narrative about certain teams, divisions, and everything like that.
It is truly the definition of a week-by-week basis. Like, when you hear the famous saying of, oh, he's week-by-week.
It's any given Sunday.
It really is. And I told you karma was coming for that cheater, Harbaugh. I told you. Everyone was jumping on that bandwagon, getting Super Bowl chanted.
27 straight points to the Commanders. It's pretty rough.
Give me a break.
They were up 10-0.
Give me a break. Okay. And now, seeing the Broncos do their thing and the Chiefs come back. Now, listen. We took your damn Jacksonville Jaguars on the cover 5 tonight. I hope they show up on the money line and the spread line. But one would think Kansas City does move on to 3-2 in some capacity tonight.
I tend to agree. We'll get into that game as we move further into the show today. We got you up until 7, Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. We're going to have Seth Jones, the Florida Panthers defenseman, join us in just about 20-some-odd minutes, about 4:40. Seth Jones will be on with us talking about the Panther season. They got the ring ceremony tonight. They got the raising the banner. They got the first game, a home opener, tomorrow down at Amerant Bank Arena in Sunrise against the Blackhawks. So stay tuned for that. You'll hear that right here on ESPN 106.3. That's Seth Jones coming up in just a little bit. What we're going to do is we're going to do a little John C. Cassidy temperature check. On the other side of things, we will take a timeout, get into what we saw from the Patriots as well. The New England Patriots, 3-2. Mike and I thought that team stunk after week one. That's the NFL for you. Things change. Patriots are now here to stay. We'll get into that, get into a whole lot more. It's on the other side. It's Rushon Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3, 888-760-3776. Your biggest overreaction to week 5 of the NFL season now, essentially in conclusion outside of the Monday Night Football game on tonight between the Chiefs and the Jags. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Rizzo. We get Christian Catt. Now, if you're Mike Rizzo and you want to celebrate a pretty good performance by the Cleveland Browns, you got to make sure your health is in check, too. And that's where Mike goes over to Men's Only Medical.
Absolutely. That's Doc Al over at Men's Only Medical. And, folks, I am focusing on weight management and nutrition and the preventative. I'm taking preventative actions, you know, so things don't happen when I'm 50 years old, 6 years old, 70 years old. I'm trying to avoid some issues down the line. And that's what I'm doing with my good friend Doc Al over at Men's Only Medical. It's the concierge healthcare. And folks, if you're dealing with hair loss, if you need a skin assessment, if you got heart problems, all of this is happening over at Men's Only Medical. It's your one-stop shop men's health clinic. Women have hundreds of health clinics around the area. This is the first of its kind here in West Palm Beach. Your one-stop shop concierge healthcare at Men's Only Medical. Doc Al is a local guy. I'll tell you what, Doc Al was celebrating that Miami Hurricane victory. Big Miami Hurricane fan, Doc Al. He's also a Cardinal Newman guy, a graduate from Cardinal Newman. He's local. He's a guy you could trust. Go take a look at Men's Only Medical at mensonlymedical.com. That is mensonlymedical.com, the concierge healthcare that you need.
Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo. In terms of the other teams that have had big games yesterday, I want to go no further than Sunday Night Football. Talk about the Patriots for a second. The team 23-20 over the Buffalo Bills. In prime time, in that building, a whiteout game. These teams got to stop with the whiteout games, by the way. They never work. But a whiteout game for the Buffalo Bills.
I think you're just thinking of Penn State too much, but I understand the
never
point.
Work. They never work. And the Patriots were able to kind of shut up the Bills. And a game where they mostly controlled it, and they made game-winning plays. You got to give them all the credit in the world. And now that team is quietly 3-2. Yeah. That team could be really, really good.
Here's the thing. When Buffalo can't run the ball well, that's when they're in trouble. When they can't run
uncharacteristic
the ball.
Turnovers,
and they
too.
Couldn't. The Josh Allen interception, they had trouble running the ball. I think the biggest difference maker for the Bills within the last 2 years has been that run game in James Cook. And when Cook's averaging 3 yards a carry, I think it's going to be tough offensively. But give credit to the young quarterback, Drake May. No turnovers in the game. He managed the game. He's a true game manager. But if you're going to look this one purely on the box score, you're looking at the Patriots going, okay, how the hell did they win this game in Buffalo? The ebb and flow of the game was very odd. And you're right. You're 100% right when you say the Buffalo Bills kind of beat themselves with turnovers, bad clock management at moments before half. Very odd. The Dolphins lost this game, right? The Dolphins were in a close game, primetime game with the Bills in Buffalo.
Thursday night, yeah.
They lost from a Tua interception, and that's why I give credit to Drake May. Did he not have a touchdown? Yes, but he also didn't have an interception. So he played winning football in that sense. And you got to give credit to a coach like Vrabel, who, you know, I know I called them dead after week one. Colin, I still don't believe them. That's how crazy I am at 3-2. I'm still not buying stock in the New England Patriots. I still think they're a 6-7 win football team at the end of the season. But this is one of those wins. If you're the Patriots as an organization, you're going, okay, these are the steps forward for Mike Vrabel. This is why you go out and get Mike Vrabel, because historically, since the Tom Brady era, post-Tom Brady, you have not been able to win in Buffalo.
This is that type of win. We alluded to it earlier on Theoretically Speaking. This win for last night for the Patriots was sort of akin to the Commanders winning on that Hail Mary against the Bears. It's sort of that first, and that was week 5, I believe, too. It might have been week 6 or 7, but it's one of those, you said franchise. That franchise, ears perked up. Wait, We're not going to be a meddling in-betweener. We have this team has an opportunity to make the postseason. And I'm willing to say that because they should have won that Steeler game. And their next seven games, Saints, Titans, Browns, Falcons, then they get the Buccaneers, and then they get the Jets, Bengals, Giants. They could win six of those pretty handedly. In terms of situationally, we always talk about who's going to be the worst and go to first. I'm not saying they're going to go to first with Buffalo Bills sitting there, but they already got the win over them in the division. This is a team that could go from worst to the playoffs pretty capably because of not only that schedule, but they've showed you a lot of guts in the early part of the year and developing in the right direction. If they fix their fumbles,
yeah,
and that's a fixable. Why? That's not an interception issue. That's fumbling.
Colin, I promise you this isn't because our good buddy Wes is in studio and he's a fellow Buckeye fan. Why the hell are they giving the ball so much to Ramon Stevenson when all he does is put the ball on the carpet? Give it to Trevion Henderson. You drafted him in the second round for a reason. I don't understand why Stevenson is getting so many carries when the game in and game out, he's fumbling. I mean, he single-handedly lost him that Steeler game, fumbling the way he did. I mean, I know May had turnovers, but give Henderson the ball. That's the one knock I have on Vrabel. You drafted a second-round running back. Start giving him the ball a little bit. But, I think they're one of those teams that's, at the end of the season, they're going to have seven wins, and you're going to go, wow, that team looks different under Mike Vrabel. I can't see him as a playoff team just because I think comparatively there are better teams in the AFC. Now, Kyle, if you're going to put the Patriots in the one of the wild card spots, who are you leaving out? Are you leaving out a Baltimore Raven who look like they might not win the division and might not be a good team because of no Lamar Jackson? I just think comparatively there are better teams still lingering around that are a little better than the Patriots at this point in the AFC. You take a look at the AFC West, you got three teams that are probably going to make the playoffs out of the AFC West. So that'd be my only pushback, but I understand the weak schedule. I do.
That's as weak as it gets. I mean, that's six winnable games in the next eight. Because of that, that's situationally, that's a team that also took care of business against Carolina Panthers, who bi-weekly play terrible.
Dude,
and
you were obsessed with the Panthers. Get off the Panthers.
Mike, that team was a ride. Dude, that team was a ride. You got to jump on.
I know we're talking about the Pats right now, but that game was crazy. That Dolphin game and Panther game. It's like whenever you sign up to watch Carolina Panther football, anything can happen.
Sign up, dude. It's a ride. I don't, that team, I have the over, by the way, for those who don't know. 6.5 over. 7 wins I need.
I don't think everyone in Palm Beach County knows at this point.
I needed 2 out of their first 5. I would have loved 3, but 2 out of their first 5 I needed.
They should have beat Arizona.
And this is a team that has had 2 of the worst losses you could possibly imagine, especially last week when they got bamboozled by the New England Patriots. And then they turn around this week, and they win against a Dolphin team. He's got Bryce Young in his career, 8 career victories, 7 game winning drives. Just a bonkers team.
He is the definition of right when you think he's done and he nailed the last nail in the coffin,
he comes back
from the dead.
It's very bizarre. And it really is a joy to watch that team because,
Who is the running? Rico Dottle?
Who had 200-plus yards rushing.
Unbelievable, dude.
That team is a hoot. That team, bi-weekly, and then they're going to come out next week and they're going to lose by 50 points. Bi-weekly, an awful football team.
It's a given.
Nothing wrong with that because I just need 7 wins. That's all I need. That game was a hoot, too. I mean, the Miami Dolphins, it's just the bizarre, up 17 in that game, and kind of shake it away.
Talk about the nail in the coffin. I mean, is that Mike McDaniel's
when they decided to punt with a minute 20 to go with the 3 timeouts, was it the wrong move completely? I would say no, but you're going to put the game in your defense's hands in that situation, not let your offense go for it. That's where you get burned. You get the ball back to Carolina, and they're able to close the game.
Well, your defense that wasn't able to stop a sieve the entire second half, a defense that was a sieve in the second half. Couldn't stop a nosebleed.
Bad, bad.
You got to know the ebb and flow of the game and how it's going. You knew your defense wasn't going to get a stop there. But
off of field, that was...
I digress.
Yeah, I mean, that's just classic. That is classic Miami Dolphins to lose a game in that fashion. And as for yesterday was a lot of embarrassing losses.
Well, yeah, you had, the undefeateds all really going down,
I wouldn't even call that Patriot game an embarrassing loss, but they lost at home. Yeah. The Eagles lost at home. The Giants was a pathetic loss. The Jets was another pathetic loss. I mean, the Raiders, oh my gosh, what a pathetic loss that was for them. It's a lot of pathetic, and the Cardinals, a pathetic loss. Yep. These are embarrassing losses that you saw in week five.
So Christian Cadd, our producer at the City Point Studios, on Russo Rizzo, we were talking, we're big on our Survivor, we're in big time Survivor pools, okay? And we talked about that Cardinal capitulation.
I took the Cardinals in one and Indianapolis in the other. Dude, it's like, so I went down on one.
We were on the Colts, by the way. We'll get to that game. But I took my bow in my group chat with my brother and cousin who are on our same Survivor team for the Colts. But Christian and I, back to the point, Christian and I talked about the Cardinals. We saw that show before. We saw that episode. Now, they won. They were able to somehow, some way, by the grace of God, beat the Carolina Panthers and keep us alive in our Survivor pool. But you knew they were losing that game yesterday just because of how they won the Panther game. Then there were a lot of those where the teams that were getting by the skin of their teeth finally didn't. The Bills finally didn't. The Eagles finally didn't. The Arizona Cardinals, and I know they've lost games, right? But they've won close games. They finally didn't. It was that week, this week, of these teams that have been kind of skating by in close victories weren't able to do it.
Well, that's where that works. It works in that first four games of the year. And then once you're sort of getting into, there's a lot of game film out, and these teams are starting to get their groove, whether positively or negatively. I mean, offensive lines are starting to play better, a little less penalties here and there. I know it's still a problem, but a little less penalties. Guys are more in shape. That is where this point of the season is. This is where you really start to make your run or fall apart if you're an NFL team.
I think this is my favorite Indiana Jones movie, by the way. Well, how about the Colts, man? Indiana Jones and Danny Dimes? I mean, geez. I know Geno Smith stinks. Most interceptions in the NFL this year. I don't know what the hell happened to him. Guy goes to the Raiders and has Tom Brady talking into his ear and turns into one of the worst quarterbacks ever.
You think the Raiders are happy they made that decision?
No!
How do you think Seattle feels right now, thinking that we let Geno walk out the door and we just got Sam Darnold on a bargain?
Right. And then on the flip side of that, the Vikings. I understand they somehow, some way beat the damn Browns. I don't even get me started on that godforsaken London game that happened at 9:30 in the morning. That was a four-hour game, and it wouldn't end. But there's a lot of that. Buyer's remorse, right? Buyer's and seller's remorse at the quarterback situation this year. I cannot believe how bad the Raiders are. I was dead wrong before the year, and I said I thought they'd be able to be a tough out in the division. Those teams are going to walk all over them this year. And I think you saw a little bit of them. I don't want to say giving up, Colin, because these guys are professionals. They didn't show up in that second half at all. It was pathetic. I felt bad for the Raider fan on Sunday.
Their best offensive player is a running back. And on a running back on a bad team with a lot of flaws all over the place. And with a brand new head coach who's an experienced coach, but brand new nonetheless. And they don't have a ton of defensive talent. I mean, and a quarterback that's not playing well. They have so many issues that they're going to need to fill in.
Chip Kelly should have stayed in college. He should have stayed with Wes and I's Buckeyes, okay?
I mean, because that is a mess. They got Tom Brady sitting there in the stands with him as well when he ever gets a chance. Like, how much of an example does Tom Brady really provide them?
Geno Smith started getting the whisper from Tom Brady and turned into the Geno Smith from 2013 with the Jets all over again.
If you live bet, perhaps on the Hard Rock Bet app, and maybe took Tennessee Titans when they were probably plus 1,000, plus 1,500. It was that lopsided of a game on the app. You could do that. You could capitalize on a whole bunch of other things. You got two baseball games today in the divisional series. You got the NL side going today, the Cubs Brewers in the late slate, and the Dodgers and the Phillies in the early slate, 6:08. You could catch that all and bet it all on the Hard Rock Bet app. Go down today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Hard Rock's the best because it caters to two types of players. The person that's brand new to a sportsbook and doesn't know what direction they want to go with their picks, or the person that is completely experienced and wants an intricate type of sportsbook, you could do that on the app. They can check out the Discover page, see what other users are putting together and betting on their own. It's all in one spot. It's the Hard Rock Bet app. Check it out today. It's offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus, physically present in Florida to wager. Terms and conditions apply. Concerned about gambling, call 1-888-ADMIT-IT. Who do you think embarrassed themselves the most in the NFL slate this week?
Because the New York Yankees. Oh, the NFL slate. The NFL slate.
If you do a couple different directions, if you opened it up, the Yankees embarrassed themselves.
Oh, my God.
Penn State embarrassed themselves. Florida State embarrassed themselves. But I'm curious, NFL specific for you. We'll get into whoever embarrassed themselves sports-wide over the weekend, but NFL, who's yours?
You could go a couple of directions here. I got to go with the Ravens. I know they didn't have their starting quarterback.
I can't blame them.
But to just die at home,
they just don't have any.
44 points.
They just didn't have any players.
44 points. Colin, they still have a damn defense.
But their eight players were all Pro Bowlers.
44 points.
They were missing
pride.
They were missing Kyle Hamilton. They were missing Ronnie Stanley. They were missing Lamar Jackson. They were missing Marlon Humphrey.
Fine. If you're making
that's fine. I understand
the Chargers. Then the Chargers.
That's a good answer.
Because khaki pants, you know, if I'm going to sit here and say they gave Green Bay the preseason Lombardi before we played a game, well, they gave Justin Herbert and cheating khaki
the
pants
week three.
In week three the Lombardi, and now they've lost two games in a row and they got divisional play coming up still. I'd probably have to go with the Ravens or the Chargers. We talked about the Raiders, but like, everyone thought, outside of me, I feel like the consensus was the Raiders were kind of going to stink this year. So I would even say Ravens getting roasted by 44 points at home. You want some roasted Raven? You had that over at that ridiculous giant purple clam cake. And then I would say cheater, pumpkin eater, Harbaugh losing 27-10 to a Jaden Daniels on one leg.
Yeah, 27 straight points they gave up after a 10-0 lead. They couldn't
do
anything.
Herbert ball. That's Justin Herbert.
He's either there or he is not, and you feel his absence when he's just not having it that day, and that's in that building too, that stupid arena, that stupid stadium, SoFi Center, where it's all just away fans that are there. Oh, it's a joke.
It's like L.A. needed more football, right?
Right. Unbelievable.
L.A. needed
another
more
team
football.
That I said I thought embarrassed themselves where I thought the Eagles did in some capacity.
Come on.
I do.
It's one game. It's
blew a 14-point lead at home to a team you probably should have beaten, held them to 3 points, and you're throwing the ball to please your wide receivers, and then you guys lose. And you lose in the facet that in the aspect that they did with that Hail Mary, and both guys got their hands on it, fighting over it. It was like a perfect visual to the situation. We have two receivers who were fighting over attention from their said quarterback, and the quarterback's, all right, somebody go get it, and they're both ripping it from each other, and nobody wins. That's the classic visual representation of what the Eagles were. Now you got to move on from it.
They won like 20 in a row.
I know, it's not a big deal.
One game.
Specific to the weekend. Specific to the weekend.
Fair enough.
But I thought the Eagles did not handle themselves properly. We didn't even get into the New York teams. The New York Giants, the first team in 9 years to turn the ball over five straight possessions.
I also, in our Russo and Rizzo group chat, as you know, I'm a big Jackson Dart guy. I took my victory lap a little too early on that one on Sunday.
It's just,
they're up 14-0. Christian texted playoffs. You know, I was right there with them. And then the rookiness of the rookie quarterback, I think,
they
started coming
apart.
Up. Brother,
oh,
when he literally, Dart literally threw the ball away. Like he was scrambling around, Noah touched him, and he forgot the ball somehow.
Yeah. And then they got a 3-day week, and then they're going against the Eagles on a short week, Thursday night football, coming off a loss.
About to say, coming off a very bad tasting loss where they had the game won.
So me and Theo have come to an agreement. Like, we were texting about the games. He was giving me a lot of crap, then I was giving him a lot of crap. I think it's reasonable for football fans to not make any conclusion until like the 4-minute mark in the fourth quarter, because these games flip on their head every single time. I was getting just so much crap from Theo about the Broncos until the Broncos came back and won. I was giving Theo so much crap about the Patriots, the Bills. You cannot make a conclusion on these games until they're over.
Yeah. And quit on that, our cover five picks.
Yeah, we did well.
Dude, firm handshakes in the chat, Kyle.
Cardinals.
So what do we take?
Did great.
What do we take?
So you took the Cowboys. I took the Colts.
Yeah.
And those were the two biggest lopsided games.
That'll win the week for us.
Yeah, they'll win the week. And I think if you're Jags, I got to check the app. If you're Jags.
What are you umming about, Christian?
You did not win the week. We did better than you this week.
You guys did?
Yeah.
What'd you guys have?
We had the Texans, baby. And the Texans brought home the bacon.
That's the one. Was that your bet?
This is the type.
Fair point if it was.
This is the type of week to have.
But here's the thing:
picks because it was a blowout week.
This might come out as selfish. I'm just the grand overall is what I'm worried about, and I still think we have the lead.
Oh yeah, you still do.
The grand overall, and for those of you that don't know what this is, Christian, it's our Cover Five competition. Where if you could sign up for free,
and it's an app on the App Store, Cover Five, and you could it's treated like lightning bets. So if you bet a game against the spread -3, the team wins by 10, you get 7 points. So that's why the blowouts were big for us, because if you get a blowout and the Texans spread is -1, and all of a sudden they win by 40 35 points, then you could turn around and say, hey, we're plus 35 in that game alone. We make five picks a week. ESPN West Palm is the actual league name. You could join and use code MVP2025 to get in on the action. And the winner each week gets entered into a chance to co-host the show.
Well, no.
They have to win the year.
The year, yeah. And that's close. And you got to get them by now.
And each week is the chance to win Duffy's.
Yes. If you beat both Team Theoretically Speaking and Team Russo and Rizzo, all those teams that are above us, they get entered to win Duffy's.
Christian needs to be the one explaining this for now
on,
worked. By the way.
We got through that.
And anyway, listen, Christian, you won the week until the Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Chiefs by about 20 points tonight at home.
I called the Patriots winning outright, and my second dog in Cats and Dogs
is the
Jaguars.
I was in on the Patriots, too. We should have taken that. Yeah,
I think the Jaguars are going to win this game outright.
You were onto that. You were onto it.
I'm nervous about that Jacksonville game. It's going to be a close one. I do think it will be close, but I can't say that will be a major.
Quickly,
that will not be a.
Quickly, did you see the new commercial of Lawrence and Travis Hunter?
Yeah. Stop.
Two or three weeks ago?
Yeah, they need to stop. The Adidas commercial?
Christian, you know how much I watch football? It was the first time I saw it was Sunday.
Oh.
First time I saw it was Sunday.
888-760-3776. Number to get into the program on Russo and Rizzo. We go to New Jersey. Cologne, New Jersey. Welcome in, Cologne. How are you today? What's going on?
Hey, guys. No, a lot of teams embarrass themselves over the weekend. There's one team that keeps embarrassing every week and every year. That's the New York Jets. Okay? You know, guys, ever since week one, it looked a little different, and then that fumble happened, and ever since then, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. He cut Gibson for fumbling. Now everybody's fumbling. You know, I think last week he scolded the team after the loss, and the team doesn't respond. You know, I know he has the year, but he's making it really, really hard right now, you know, possibly a one and done. I don't think it's going to happen. But I'm listening to his press conference. He makes it sound like, you know, every week, the fumbling and the penalty, fumbling and the penalty. We correct this, we'll win the game. You know what? They're not going to win. Even if they correct the fumbles and the penalties, he's not proving himself that he's a good coach. You know, and Justin Fields, I don't know whether he's good or not. You know, he hasn't thrown interceptions, which is great. But, you know, I don't think this team is any good. And the team also looks very defeated. Last week, I think Breece Hall said, you know, we shoot ourselves in the foot and then we shoot ourselves in the head. And that's exactly what happened yesterday against the Cowboys, trying to score two in the first half, trying to score.
Now, Cologne, let me ask you this. I mean, would you be in favor, if this continues to spiral downward, would you be in favor of making a drastically quick change, like for head coach of the New York Jets next year?
No, because I saw what happened last year. Last year we did that, and that team, you know what? Last year, okay, we got rid of our head coach, the coach, bad mistake, because we could have won some games down the stretch because of bad coaching. We did not, and the only reason why we were in those games was because of Aaron Rodgers. This year is I know what Aaron Glenn's trying to do is build the culture. It's now looking back, okay? His mistake was letting go, bringing back Aaron Rodgers.
All right. Appreciate the call, Cologne.
He might be onto something in the sense that they probably were the biggest disgraces just because they're the only defeated team.
I've learned to accept it.
Dude, I cannot believe. But my favorite scene in the NFL by any coach this year was Aaron Glenn doing the chicken dance in Tampa Bay, forgetting that Tampa Bay had two timeouts
and
in minute 23
yeah.
to go. I mean, you've said it. I've said it. How many times that Cologne just said it? How many times after the game can Aaron Glenn say the same song and dance and not see a result?
How many times?
I'll listen to that.
And I'm not Aaron. I didn't like Aaron Glenn when he was doing coach interviews and then goes in and gives up 100 points in the playoff game against Washington.
Don't get it twisted. I'm not saying fire Aaron Glenn midseason or anything like that. I am with Cologne, though, to where if this team wins two or three games, I think a conversation might have to be warranted if you're going to bring this fella back. That's it.
888-760-3776. Who is your most embarrassing team of the weekend? Is it the New York Yankees? Is it the Penn State Nittany Lions? Is it the New York Jets?
We got to get to break, Kyle, but the Yankees. I mean, geez. Did they get off the plane?
Didn't even bother. Didn't even bother. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo. Go start your day with a victory over at F45 Downtown West Palm Beach. Check out their Instagram, F45 Downtown West Palm Beach. It's perfect because it's a 45-minute workout class. So you show up, you can kind of turn your brain off, follow along in the instructions on the screen, what workouts you're going to be doing, and you and a bunch of like-minded fitness individuals with loud music and two coaches on site, you do the workout, and all of a sudden, 45 minutes pass in a blink of an eye, and then all of a sudden, you walk out there with your heart rate raised, you got your workout in for the day, you feel good, and it's more the functional side of working out. It's not like lifting the Olympic-style lifts. You feel stiff, you feel too sore. This is more about getting functionally stronger so you could do your day-to-day even better, more flexible, more mobile, and on the strength side of things. That's F45 Downtown West Palm Beach. Check it out today on their Instagram. What we will do is we will bloop in the defenseman of the Florida Panthers, Seth Jones. He's going to be joining us on the other side of things. Talk about a little Florida Panthers, which are opening up their season. The Stanley Cup Florida Panthers opening up their season tomorrow. Seth Jones coming up on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Christian Catworth, City Play Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. Looping in a new friend of show, a new friend of program. Now the new home, one of the new homes of the Florida Panthers, who are on their quest for a three-peat. We'd like to welcome in star defenseman four. The Florida Panthers, who's acquired in the midpoint of last year, was a part of their Stanley Cup run this past year. And we're pleased to have him on. Seth Jones joins us. Seth, welcome in. How you doing today? What's going on?
I'm doing great. Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good. How was your weekend? Did you have an entertaining weekend?
I sure did. Some bumps and bruises, but we're all good. We're ready to go.
Was it a lot, Seth? All right, Seth. I'm curious because let's get right into it. Lightning over the weekend, preseason bout. I mean, a record amount of players, 16 players ejected. It's the preseason, so I guess you can get away with it. You had guys fighting left and right. Give us a little bit of a man on the ground, boots on the ground situation. What went down over the weekend against the Lightning?
Honestly, I'm going to take the words out of Paul's mouth. It's just two old friends getting reacquainted this year. We're just two teams trying to get ready for the season. Obviously, some things happened in the playoffs last year, but I think we're all good now, and we're ready to go for the season.
And Seth, you know, the Florida teams have really dominated representing, you know, the Eastern Conference in that Stanley Cup. Just how, after getting inserted into that rivalry back in February, how, I mean, those are just two teams. You guys are just two teams that just don't like each other. Am I right on that?
I think we can all agree on that, especially after what transpired this weekend. I was definitely didn't realize, you know, from the outside looking in, you're on a different team. You don't understand the intensity of the rivalry. And then, you know, when you're put into it, even in a regular season game after, you know, when I got here, you can just feel the game is a little bit different. You know, the pregame, the way the guys are getting ready feels much more like a playoff game, a playoff atmosphere. You know, we have met in the first round a few times in a row now. There's definitely history there. You know, guys, you just naturally develop a competitiveness and a hatred for the guy across from you.
And does the team almost feel better in the locker room after you sort of, you vent out all the frustrations you said from over the playoffs, whether it be on the hit on Barkov or whatever it might have been? You sort of vent out these frustrations preseason. Does everybody, both parties, just sort of move on with their lives after that?
I guess we'll find out, right? I don't know. I haven't looked at the schedule that far ahead, but I don't know if you need to tune in. Who knows?
Seth, when you mentioned it, when you were acquired in the midpoint season, you were sort of thrusted into this Florida Panther, dynasty, so to speak. At this point, you weren't there for the first two Stanley Cup runs, at least to the final. Tell us a little bit about when she got there from Chicago. There was an obvious interest on your end to be involved with a contender. You got to one, and you sort of are thrust into this middle of this dynasty. Tell us a little bit about once you got there, how easy was it to acclimate with a bunch of guys who are in the quest of repeating where you're going for the first one on your personal end?
Yeah, I mean, it was very easy. You know, when it just came to being at the rink, seeing how the guys operated, seeing how they, you know, even going to the finals the last 2 years, losing one and winning one, you still saw how hungry they were every single day in practice, mid-season, how competitive they were, their will to get better from the top down, from the coaching staff all the way to the players. And so When I got here, it's easy to really slot in and you're just told to do your job at the end of the day. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the best at what I brought to the table and for this team. And when it came to the system, completely different system from a lot of really a lot of West Coast teams. The defense are made to gap up a little bit more here. And the forwards come back and track harder. So there's different systematic things that I struggle with maybe in the first couple of weeks, but did a lot of video with the coaches here, watched, you know, obviously game reps are the best practice for that kind of thing. And so when it came playoff time, I was ready to go.
You know, Seth, it sounds like the culture is really one of the big reasons, you know, the team has been able to be successful. And it's not surprising because, you know, Coach Paul, 25 years of NHL experience before coming to the Panthers, obviously the two Stanley Cups. I know you described a little bit there, but what's different about the Panthers and the way they do things from other stops you've been in the NHL?
Yeah, I you know, I can only speak for, you know, say I'm coming from Chicago. I think it's a little bit more based on development. And so you're going to get teams that are a little bit more development based and not in that winning window, and then teams that are in that winning window. And so here in Florida, there's no development. You know, you bring your game to the table, you do the system, and that's it. And if you don't do the system, you're probably not going to play. And that's told to you right from the very start, at least when I got here. But that's how everyone plays the game. Everyone plays hard. Everyone plays direct. And there's a certain style that we believe is winning style. And we believe that we play the best game that way. And so everyone's on the same page. There's not a guy that's trying to do his own thing. And that means a lot, especially in playoff time.
Seth Jones, defenseman, Florida Panthers, with us now on ESPN 106.3. Seth, going into now the quest to win three in a row, if you're the Florida Panthers, you guys have a short offseason because you made that run into the postseason last year. You have a shorter offseason. You got to get back into the flow of things. You also don't want to, you know, you don't want to relish too much on what has happened, and now you sort of have to reset a little bit, especially with the injuries that the team have dealt with, Barkov, and so to speak. Tell us a little bit about how you guys have reset. What has Paul Maurice told the guys? What have you guys said internally about, hey, understanding that we have an opportunity to go for three, we have an opportunity to make history, but also we got to also start from completely square one?
Yeah, I think that was reiterated first day of training camp this year. Nothing is given in this league, and you got to earn it every single year, regardless of what happened the year before. And of course, the injuries now, we lost some key players offensively. You know, Barkey, one of the best two-way centers, and Matthew is, you know, brings a certain culture and a certain style to our play on the ice. And so I think everyone has to get, you know, 10-15% better this year, try to fill in those gaps as best we can, and be, you know, even harder, be even better. So, you know, 16 teams make the playoffs every year. Like I said, nothing's given to you. We're going to have to earn that spot regardless of where we finish and earn a trip to the big dance. So, you know, we have the ring ceremony tonight, the banner raising tomorrow before the game. And I think that kind of closes the chapter on of last year and really puts us in a position to focus on for what's to come.
Seth, speaking of this year, what's kind of been your main vocal point of what you want to improve on heading into the season?
I think just being consistent with my game. I think the first thing that a defenseman always has to think about is the defensive game, defensive side of the puck, keeping a good gap to the neutral zone, not making it easy on guys, being physical. I think playing with Mikkola, he's a great, big, rangy skating defenseman who's physical, has really helped my game. He pushed me to be better and to skate and stay alongside him. And then offensively, I mean, move the puck on the power play well, you know, shoot the puck, be aggressive, just the little things that I think go a long way when it comes to a long season.
And Seth, you've had a fascinating career, and I'm more fascinated about the upbringing because obviously your father, Ronald Popeye Jones, played in the NBA. He was all around the league, played an 11-year career about, and you and Caleb, your brother, went on to become professional hockey players. Not every day do you see a professional sort of getting the kids involved in a separate sport and then rising all the way through the ranks to the professional level. Tell us a little bit about how that started for you, because not only your kids growing up on the road following the professional side of things, but you didn't want to get on the hardwood. You wanted to get on the ice. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, growing up in Colorado, my dad finished with the Nuggets, and then We kind of settled down there. Avalanche were a very good team before the salary cap era. They were loaded. They probably have 10 Hall of Famers from those 1999 to 01, that range in there. And so was able to be at Game 7 when they won the Stanley Cup against the Devils. An unbelievable experience. You know, I'm 6-7 years old seeing that. And I'm sure it's very similar to the way youth hockey is growing here in Florida now with us winning the Cups. That's how it was in Denver back in the early 2000s. And so I was kind of caught in that mix of every kid in school wanted to play hockey. Every kid wanted to be Joe Sakic, wanted to be Heydu, or Peter Forsberg, and then Patrick Waugh was on that team. So there's just so many players and professional athletes to look up to on the hockey side of things that I was kind of caught in that. And so me and my brothers all started playing at the same time and really never looked back. I love basketball. I love watching it. I love playing pickup. I just never played organized.
Now, Seth, do you have a favorite moment of dad being an NBA player growing up? Do you have like a game or a moment remembering dad playing in the NBA?
Favorite moment. There was a highlight. Well, he played with Michael Jordan with the Wizards. When Jordan came back for a year or two, I think. So that was pretty cool. He has a pair of Michael Jordan shoes actually that are signed. And I've been trying to get him off him, but he's not giving them to me.
That's the last thing. Yeah, that's going to stay in the office.
Yeah. I gotta work him some more. But yeah, so that was pretty cool to see that. And then, you know, I think just when I was old enough, I was like 10 to 12 years old, he was coaching the Mavericks. So I saw, you know, Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Kidd and a lot of these guys when I was at a young age. How they worked, you know, you see them playing the games and see how hard they work, but you don't see behind the scenes. You don't see there's no days off. You know, there's maybe 2 days off a week during the season, or sorry, a month in the season. You're traveling. And so me seeing that at that age really helped me understand what it was and what it would take to be a professional athlete. And so I'm not sure if I would be here today along with Caleb, my younger brother. We'd still be playing professional sports.
And one thing about your father's career is he played in a number of different spots. You mentioned the Wizards, you mentioned Dallas, you mentioned Denver. Jumping around on the road like that, I mean, that's an interesting way to grow up, because are you bouncing around with him every single time, even if it's a year stop? How did you handle that growing up?
Yeah, so a lot of it happened when I was really young. So I think I lived in Toronto when I was 1 year old. Don't even remember that. Boston for maybe a year or two when I was really young. So there's a lot of it happened early. And then when he got traded to Denver is where he said, you know, let's just settle down here. We love the city. We loved the mountains. And so that's where I was for about 8 years. And then ended up moving back to Texas when I was about 11 years old, 10 or 11. So finished my youth hockey career there. You know, went to the U.S. program at 15, was never home after that.
Said the mint. I got to ask, because I do it myself, but you ski? You ever ski growing up in Colorado?
As a kid, I did.
Okay.
And then when you get into hockey or sports, you don't want to mess your knees up and stuff. So
yeah, now
they tell you to stay away from skiing. That's the last thing you should do.
Absolutely. No bikes.
I had to ask.
Mountain biking, no nothing.
That's an outdoorsy place.
It's an active state.
Good golf courses in the mountains.
Yeah. My mom's sister. She grew up, you know, I grew up visiting them in Vail. So I do all that stuff out there. When did you know you could be a professional hockey player? Like, I like asking professional athletes this. Was there a time in your youth career or wherever you meant, hey, I'm a little better than everyone else, and maybe I could really make a living doing this?
Yeah, I think it was probably right before, you know, I think it's happened so early now, but, you know, when I was 13 or 14, I want to say agents started popping up and scouts around the rink and things like that. Colleges start coming to you, which is kind of crazy at age 13 because you don't know what you want at that age. But that's kind of when you start to realize that, you know, there's only a few kids are talking to a team and you kind of get put in that group. And then, you know, you go to the U40 camp or the U.S. program when you're 15 and made that team. And you kind of just... it kind of just happens, you know. There's not really like one certain point where you realize it, but you know, when you go to the U.S. program is when it really all starts to take shape. International hockey starts coming into play. NHL scouts start talking to you and your agent. So it's just the little things like that happen along the path.
And the growth getting into hockey, you know, you got to go through the youth programs. You got to play in the smaller leagues and everything. Like growing up, it's different than the usual circuit. Not everybody needs to play collegiately. Not everybody needs to do the different route. But tell me a little bit about that route comparatively to what I guess you knew on the basketball side of things. It's completely different in age. I know it's changed a little bit, but give us a little bit of insight of what it takes really to work your way up to the highest level of the NHL.
Yeah, I think in other sports, it's just you go high school, you know, you play at home, you play high school, you play college, and you go to the professionals. And I think in hockey, there's so many different avenues. Three Canadian hockey leagues, you can go to Europe like Austin Matthews did and come back. You can go to college. Now you can start switching whenever you want. So it's crazy now. But there was only two ways that I could do it then. And so growing up, my parents were very pro-college, get a degree, do the 4 years. And I toured a few schools my senior year of high school. And then WHL kind of came about, Canadian Hockey League. My goal was to play 1 year and go to the NHL. That was my goal. So I thought, you know, 1 year of college may not be worth it for me. So I went to 1 year to Portland Winterhawks in the WHL, and then got drafted by Nashville and played that first year. So it all worked out for me. But every kid's, I would never tell a kid to do that, right? Every path is different. There are late bloomers. There are kids that are ready to go at 18 or 19. So just all depends on the situation.
And Seth, segueing back to the Panthers a little bit, you mentioned home opener coming about just in about a day, the ring ceremony, all the glitz and glamour that comes with winning a Stanley Cup is sort of coming and going in the next 2 days. Tell me a little bit about what your favorite memory was from this summer, from the offseason of celebrating this Stanley Cup victory, and what you're most looking forward to next year.
Oh, man, that's tough. I will probably say the week after we won, just all the partying, being around the guys, celebrating. The parade was awesome.
Down here, too. Yeah. The place is adequately suited for a Stanley Cup celebration, if I may say so myself.
The parade was awesome. You know, 400, 500,000 people there on the beach going down the A1A. It was just a beautiful sight to see. Just sharing that cup with the city, the fans, the people who had our backs. And so that was really the highlight for me is being a part of that. You always see it when other teams win, videos and all that, but being a part of it was something special.
And to build on that a little bit, I think the one thing that has happened, at least in this area, because of the resurgence of what the Florida Panthers have been, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, is hockey is really starting to make its footprint here in South Florida. And I think you got a sense of that, you know, when Tampa Bay was really good, Tampa Bay sort of had a similar situation. But with these great organizations, hockey is very good at making a regional presence felt for the sport itself. Tell me a little bit about what you've noticed about coming to Florida from places like Chicago, Columbus, who have now started to really embrace the greatness of not only the Florida Panthers, but of the sport of hockey itself. Have you noticed anything specific about South Florida generally?
I have. I think when I was drafted, so 2013, and to see where it's came from there, is such a dramatic difference, such a dramatic change. And obviously the new ownership and things like that and the team getting better has helped. But, you know, it's a tough building to come in and play now. You know, when I was in Chicago the last 4 years, 3 years, you did not want to come play Florida. You know, you were getting banged, you were getting bruised up, you were getting hit. And so it was going to be a tough night. And then the crowd's loud, everyone's in your ear. It's just a tough, tough game to play. So being on the other side of it, it's obviously much better. And so you understand that teams, they understand, they know it's going to be a tough night when they come and play at our building there in Sunrise. And so that's something that we use to our advantage.
You know, Seth, you talked about it earlier in the interview, how, you know, last year's in the past, we're focusing on this year. You know, you got the home opener coming up. What's Coach Paul telling you guys in that locker room? What's the main thing right now as you guys gear up to, you know, hopefully three-peat here in South Florida?
Well, it's a new year, new beginnings, new challenges. That's really the message. And like I'll go back to, you know, we lost, you know, our number one center, and we lost, you know, Matt. And so everyone's got to really try to fill that void this year. You know, there can't be any, you know, stretch of games where we're not at the top of our mental, shape, really, and taking lapses mentally. So we know Bob's going to be big in net. We know we have a system, and we're going to play that system the best we can. But I think consistency is going to be the main thing for us this year, and trying to get as many points as we possibly can.
Seth, we appreciate you giving us the time. Appreciate you giving us a little bit of rundown of how the last couple of months have went, what you're looking forward to about the team, and giving us a little bit of background of over the weekend. Appreciate it as always. Enjoy the season. Enjoy the ring ceremony and get ready for a new start. A quest for three-peat starts now. Appreciate it, Seth.
Thanks, Seth.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Seth Jones, Florida Panthers defenseman, joining us there on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. They got a big game coming up tomorrow against the Chicago Blackhawks, 5 p.m. They're going to get all the glitz out of the way and then on to a new year, as Seth says. Appreciate him giving us the time. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Christian Catt, Russo and Rizzo taking the time out in ESPN 106.3.